The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, "Where Are My Members?" As the local economy sizzles, membership numbers are down at several area business booster groups. Why? It was the Raleigh Chamber that was left disappointed and tight-lipped when the Apple Project seemingly stalled in 2018, but it was also the chamber that sprung to attention in April of 2021 when the state once again heard from Thompson. Records show officials with the Raleigh Chamber scrambled to attention once more, and this time the project picked the triangle. It ended up being Project Bear, B-E-A-R, also known as Apple, complete with 3,000 promised jobs for Research Triangle Park. Need for local players. While Thompson won't go on the record about Apple or the negotiations involved with the project, he will say all site selection pursuits, big or small, require local players. And in the case of Apple, that's clearly the Raleigh Chamber, record show, which went from 2,300 members in 2015 to 1,720 at the end of 2020 after years of gradual decline. In rural communities, the situation may be even more dire. In 2015, the Zebulon Chamber of Commerce, for example, had 240 members. Amid the pandemic last year, however, the entire chamber shut down. It only reopened in May with newly implemented chamber head John Saffold. Saffold couldn't say how many members the chamber had at the end of last year, but it's about 140 today. The decline started well before the pandemic. In Zebulon, the real dip happened in 2018 when the group went from 240 members to 150. Today, Zebulon's chamber does not have a direct economic development component, though it did years ago. "The charge I've been given, people need the chamber to facilitate reconnecting," Saffold says. "So that's what I'm doing right now." Like many rural chambers, its job is to make connections, but like many rural chambers, it has to keep up with the changing needs of its community, and that could be part of the issue. In Zebulon, like in many chambers on the periphery of the triangle, it's a balancing act. Saffold said the challenge is transitioning from a small-town chamber into a chamber that mirrors more the growth that's occurring in Wake County. But chambers can get that balancing act wrong, and it reflects in the numbers. In Zebulon, membership fees were increased, and Saffold says that is likely responsible for part of the decline in small business membership years ago. "That is something that, especially post-COVID, I am reviewing," he says. "The growth is coming, the growth is happening, but at the same time, we have to make sure we honor the roots and the foundations we have as a small town." Lean model. One advantage smaller, more networking-oriented chambers have is their nimbleness, but changing methodology requires attentiveness, says Linda Parsons, who heads up the Moore County Chamber of Commerce. Her chamber has seen steady numbers, which she credits to listening. Moore County ended the year with 620 members, just shy of the 640 it had reported in 2019. She credits the chamber's decision to completely suspend billing for 3 months. Parsons also credits the chamber's lean model. "We're not even a chamber," she says. "We don't do events." While Moore County, home to Pinehurst, has a... we are not an event chamber, she says. "We don't do events." While Moore County, home to Pinehurst, has a golf tournament and a few curated networking events, it is extremely selective, Parsons says. Instead of throwing out offerings and seeing what sticks, it's talking to members all the time, she says. The chambers who have not adapted to the world we live in today are probably seeing a much larger decline, she adds. And 2020 meant a lot of adapting. In Wake Forest, where memberships typically cover up to 70% of operating expenses, chamber head Ann Welton got creative, holding an online auction. "A brand new revenue stream for us," she says, "and outdoor events. In Holly Springs, Chamber Chairwoman Tonya Palumba says her organization shifted its system to allow for quarterly payments and began offering diversity and inclusion programming to respond to the times. Cindy Poindexter, who has the Chatham County Chamber, says the virtual events helped her group retain most of its members. But Parsons says chambers also have to be realistic and understand that the world is changing. Not everyone should be a chamber member, and not all chamber CEOs see it that way, Parsons says. While data from the North Carolina Secretary of State's office shows business registration filings are up, it's more nuanced. The numbers include sole proprietorships. They include eBay sellers, investment property entities. And in the triangle, they include startups that, for the most part, don't tend to pursue chamber membership out of the gate, says Robbie Allen, a startup advisor and CEO of Startomatic. Chambers of commerce are not something most startup entrepreneurs reach out to or are engaged with. I can't even recall a time when they said, "I just made a great connection to the chamber," he says. The relevant factor. That's one problem, relevance. For a small company to funnel precious resources into a membership, they need to feel they're getting something out of it, Allen says. Another problem, particularly in the transitional period post-COVID, is budget. I'm not surprised that after the pandemic, some companies had to suspend their memberships, says Raleigh Chamber CEO Adrian Cole. Chambers have many jobs, from supporting existing companies through events and other resources to lobbying state government on behalf of business owners. But it's economic development, recruiting headquarters, expansions, and site locations that gets the biggest headlines. At the Raleigh Chamber, the group is working 36 active projects representing more than 8,500 jobs and more than $2.5 billion in capital investment, says Cole. It defines an active project as one it has engaged with in the past 3 months. It's hosted 28 site events or site visits since October, and it's particularly active in life sciences and information technology projects, she says. Durham, too, has an active economic development arm, frequently participating in site visits. But even chambers without a physical economic development entity have critical roles to play. You just don't really know how vital chambers can be until you go to an area that has a robust chamber of commerce, says Will Ruzick, general manager for Provalis, which is building a reputation for its rural investments. Just 2 years ago, the firm announced it was building a call center in the rural South Carolina community of Manning, a 100-job investment. The company had looked at North Carolina first, but wasn't impressed with the business vitality in a small town near the state's southern border. So much of our mission is about revitalization, being a catalyst for additional investment in these communities, he says. Thriving downtowns have one thing in common, community support, and in most cases that's boosted by a chamber, Ruzick says. North Carolina is still on the firm's radar, a possibility for future investment, but as with all projects, it will take a hard sell, and for companies with the Provalis mindset, that requires local players, he says. A team effort. Even though small-town chambers may not be involved in the incentives negotiations, they are involved in steering the business community. Without them, downturns can be decimated, Ruzick says, and that makes companies like his less likely to invest. But Ernie Pearson, an economic development lawyer with Nex and Pruitt, takes it a step further. When entities such as EDPNC hook a project, whether it's an Apple or even a Provalis, they sign the papers, have the press conference, and then they're largely out of the picture until the next investment. It's up to local chambers to step in with support, to make connections, and prove to the company that they made the right decision. Once the recruitment is over and there's been an announcement, that's when the real work begins, he says. Chris Chung, who leads the state's economic development efforts with EDPNC, says, "That's why you hear all of us talk about how it's a team effort. You can lose projects by not responding fast enough, hence the platoon effect, where local and state players lobby quickly to respond to requests for information from companies. But you can lose the next investments by not incorporating a company in your community. I think if people understood really what we do, the members would come," says the Raleigh Chamber's Cole. And because it's related, we're going to turn to the Viewpoint page to read the Editor's Notebook, written by Sugata Mukherjee, Editor-in-Chief of the Triangle Business Journal. The headline, "Local Chambers in Need of Self-Assessment." Without a doubt, when I saw the membership numbers of some 20-plus chambers of commerce and economic development organizations, I thought the pandemic must have been really hard on these business booster groups. After all, things were shut down for months, and we now have quantitative evidence that out of business signs were going up all over the place for much of 2020. But a closer look tells us local chambers and business booster groups were in trouble with membership efforts before the pandemic. As our deep dive this week on the reasons behind the decline of many chamber memberships points out, small business owners are becoming increasingly sensitive about how they spend their money and the return on investment of that spend. The Raleigh Chamber has lost some 600 members in the past 6 years. That's about 25% of its total members. Cary, Chapel Hill, Durham, and Wake Forest all lost members during that period of time, but just not as much. There were a few gainers that include business booster groups in Garner, Apex, Sanford, and Chatham County, but the gains were minimal. So what's happening here? Especially when the area is in the middle of strong economic growth in recent years. Billions of dollars are being poured into the area by private developers and company owners in order to build new buildings, start new lines of business, and hire thousands of additional workers. Our labor base is rising along with our population. And business registration numbers from the North Carolina Secretary of State's office show that people are starting new businesses all over the place, although there was a dip during the pandemic year. The answer lies in the changing needs of small businesses. Historically, local chambers and business groups acted like a big bazaar for small businesses to mingle, socialize, and network, to trade products and professional services with each other. They may still do that, and it may still be important, but it may not be as important. So chambers have to find another way to attract businesses to use their tools and services. What could that be? In the short run, the answer lies in chamber leadership and board members. Some of the smartest and most knowledgeable individuals are running chambers and sitting on their boards. The changing needs of business, even more so after the pandemic, are forcing these individuals to make changes to their own operations. How are they doing that? What steps are they taking to make sure the company is finding new resources of revenue? Those individuals need to re-engage and chart a navigable course for their respective chambers. Long term, the chamber must be an inclusive organization. For too long, in many chambers, we see the same faces holding the baton and not willing to pass it over to the new generation of business owners who look different from us. Leaders all across our communities need to be intentional in finding those people and offer them a seat at the table. The area's large businesses will always support efforts undertaken by business booster groups. They consider that to be part of being a good corporate citizen. It's the smaller businesses that need to come under focus. They will help increase memberships, and they will help add additional heft to our economic prowess. We just have to figure out exactly how area business advocacy groups play a role in that success. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. Major renovations begin in North Hills. North Hills is growing up again. A massive reimaging of North Hills is now underway, with construction protruding into Lassiter Mill Road and a massive hole emerging where the new project is starting to rise. In many ways, the huge undertaking is reminiscent of when developer John Kane tore down most of the old mall in 2003 to turn the main district into a pedestrian-friendly shopping area. Given North Hills' success and Raleigh's growth, the development has increasingly gone vertical, especially north of Six Forks Road. Now the area around the former site of JCPenney, one of the last remaining vestiges of the original mall, is being revamped. Plans include a 10-story office tower near the Renaissance Hotel, an 80,000-square-foot creative office space where the JCPenney is located, 270 residential units near Lassiter Mill Road, and another future tower. "We don't have any residential on what we call the main site," Kane has said. "I think it'll change the whole dynamics of that." Kane estimates the project will cost around $350 million. Durham Hotel welcomes new general manager. A cool hotel in Durham has a new leader as the hospitality industry looks to ramp up after the pandemic. New York-based Dream Hotel Group has named Waylon Rame the general manager of the 74-room Unscripted, which replaced the Jack Tar Motor Lodge in 2017. Rame has held positions at full-service hotels and resorts with Hilton, Marriott, and Sheraton, as well as five-star timeshare resorts in Virginia. Most recently, Rame was an area general manager in San Antonio. "Durham is buzzing with activity, and I look forward to offering our guests the highest level of service and hospitality they've come to know and love at Unscripted," Rame says. Wake County home prices soar. The roaring housing market has sent the cost of real estate in Wake County through the roof in 2021. The median price for real estate in the county has risen by nearly $55,000 since January. according to new data from the Wake County Register of Deeds. The median cost in June was $383,000, up from $328,750 in January. And that 16.5% increase is driven in large part by the housing market. The Register of Deeds office notes that changes in the median sales price tend to be caused by activity in the core market, property valued at $1 million or less. 95.5% of June's transactions occurred in the core market. State legislature eyes disrupting high school sports. When Cary High School won the state basketball championship in 1954, star player Charlie Adams was disappointed the finals were in a high school gym, just like regular games. So when Adams became executive director of the North Carolina High School Athletic Association in 1984, he set out to change that, creating a memory for a lifetime for high school athletes, he says. The NCHSAA had a small staff and minimal funding, so Adams created an endowment, landed sponsorships with some of the state's top corporations, and convinced universities to allow the high schools to hold championships at their venues. Soon, coaches and athletes were thrilled to play in places such as the Dean E. Smith Center and Carter Finley Stadium. Adams retired in 2010 after a spectacular run and died in 2017. His legacy is being challenged now. The NCHSAA had total assets of $41.2 million as of 2019, according to its 990 form, which has caught the attention of the General Assembly. The legislature is weighing a bill to strip the association of oversight of high school sports, which it has done since 1913. There are many layers to the issue, including how and whether to classify private schools and charter schools for sports, but these matters are always contentious in high school sports. Money is really at the heart of the matter and could bring an end to a high school sports organization that became a model for many others across the country. Shatner to appear at GalaxyCon. With the country eager to get out and have fun again, organizers are expecting big crowds when GalaxyCon is held at the Raleigh Convention Center, July 29 through August 1. The event went virtual in 2020 after it returned from 2019 when it had 38,500 paid attendees. The event is a celebration of celebrities, voice actors, entertainers, and more. The event is scheduled to feature William Shatner, who played Captain Kirk in the Star Trek series. The festival includes a wide range of other actors, including Barry Bostwick, who played Brad Majors in the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Mike Broder of Fort Lauderdale, Florida, founded GalaxyCon back in 2006. A GalaxyCon in Richmond, Virginia, scheduled for March, was canceled. Broder expects a big turnout for the event, in part because of the lineup and because everyone who attends is going to be so excited to be together, he says. And finally, we have a big number, $132 million. That's the amount of limited obligation refunding bonds State Treasurer Dale Falwell announced July 21 for North Carolina. The bonds will close August 5. The true interest cost of the bonds is 0.7%, the lowest interest rate ever obtained by the state for a LOB. Falwell noted the price is so important because it makes money available for public education, public safety, public roads, and more, he says. Now we turn to the On Tech and Banking page written by Lauren Onasorge. New owner for Cary Startup, Cary's Employ Us is acquired by a firm based in Chicago. Chicago-based Hireology has acquired Cary-based referral technology startup Employ Us for an undisclosed sum. Employ Us CEO Ryan O'Donnell calls it good news. In the deal, Employ Us keeps its brand identity and product. Customers can continue to use its product as a standalone or as part of a bundle, and Hireology will keep investing in the Triangle concern. The local operation stays intact and will likely grow via Hireology's larger wallet, says O'Donnell, who will be staying with the firm after the transition. The big value proposition? Employ Us can reach more people with its technology, which utilizes referrals to fill open positions. It is incredibly hard to hire people, O'Donnell says. We're always looking for the best ways to help companies hire people. He says deal talks emerged several months ago before intensifying, all due to the issues firms are having in finding quality labor. Employ Us, which was co-founded by Manpower veteran Jeff Stocks and its chief technology officer, Matt Cotter, has changed over the years. O'Donnell recently compared the pivot to an enterprise SaaS product, that's a software as a service, to driving off the cliff and building an airplane on the way down. The Employ Us story started at NC State University, where Stocks, who at the time was board chair of the Poole College of Management, met O'Donnell. I was impressed with his intellectual capacity, his drive, Stocks said in 2014. O'Donnell was also an entrepreneur, having created his own company, Pennies for Progress, that raised money for local public schools. When Employ Us launched, Stocks says it would become the Uber of recruitment. The pair created Employ Us on the concept that the best employees come from referrals, and the idea took off. It was one of the first companies picked for what was known as the Citrix Accelerator in downtown Raleigh. It has since solicited investments from high-profile backers, including Joe Colopy, who co-founder of Bronto Software, which was sold to NetSuite and later Oracle. Stocks declines to give details about the exit, but says he and other early investors were very happy with the financial terms. Stocks completely cashed out of his stake with the deal, as did Colopy. Colopy says he was particularly happy for the founding team. BBVA deal could benefit PNC in Triangle. More than a month after completing its acquisition of BBVA, PNC officials see opportunities emerging even for the Triangle. The Pittsburgh-based bank closed on the $11.6 billion deal for BBVA in early June and is running hard toward conversion in early October, says Jim Hansen, regional president for PNC Bank for the Eastern Carolinas region. On the surface, it's a deal with few local touch points, as BBVA's branch presence is mainly in the western portion of the United States. But Hansen says the bank is already being leveraged by PNC customers locally. Triangle firms want to expand, he says, and companies out west want to tap into the Triangle's growth demographics. BBVA did have a small presence in the Triangle, and that's being absorbed into PNC's existing presence for the most part. Some bankers have left the company. Pinnacle Financial, for example, recently announced the acquisition of former BBVA bankers to its team. Hansen says he isn't concerned, and that's just part of the reality of M&A. What he's focused on, he says, is building the team here and leveraging the bank's better value proposition to both support and win more customers. We're pleased, Hansen says. Some of these folks are coming into PNC, and others have made the decision to do something different. But we're ready and good to go, and honestly, we have a huge presence here. Former IBM president sells Durham home. Former Red Hat CEO and IBM president Jim Whitehurst has sold his home in Durham. Quietly, in the weeks before Whitehurst's departure from IBM, he and his wife Lauren sold their home just north of Hope Valley Country Club and have headed south, records show. Durham County records show the four-bedroom home, valued at $1.3 million, sold in mid-June for $2.14 million. That's just under the $2.15 million Whitehurst paid in 2008. Whitehurst's Twitter profile lists his residence as Longboat Key, Florida, on the Gulf Coast. Records in Sarasota County show Whitehurst and his wife purchased a waterfront condo in Longboat Key in April of this year for nearly $1.7 million. Business travel inches up at RDU. Business travel is returning, albeit slowly, to Raleigh-Durham International Airport. Airport CEO Mike Languth told the Raleigh-Durham Airport Authority Board this month that business travel now accounts for about 35% of RDU's overall traffic. Pre-pandemic, the split was 50-50 between business and leisure travel. Just a few months ago, the split was 20% to 80% amid pent-up leisure demand. The return to business traffic is critical as RDU works to get back the routes it lost in the pandemic. And finally, a big number, 1,125. That's the number of data breach notices the North Carolina Department of Justice has received this year. In 2020, the state received a record 1,644 data breach reports. And now we turn to On Retail and Restaurants, written by Erica Wells. Eclectic Tacos coming soon. Richmond Group plans to expand downtown Raleigh. Three restaurateurs are bringing their food fusion concepts to downtown Raleigh after finding success in Richmond, Virginia. Trey Owens and his business partners, Ari Augenbaum and Nar Hovnanian, will expand Soul Taco, a blend of Latin American and Southern food, to Raleigh by early fall, followed later by their Jewish African-inspired Jufro. They will open the establishments at 927 West Morgan Street. The group opened its first Soul Taco spot in Richmond in 2018 and the second in 2019. The trio created the concept based on the love for soul food he acquired while growing up in Virginia and visiting family in North Carolina. And Hovnanian's Mexican-influenced upbringing in Orange County, the menu includes popular dishes such as oxtail, catfish, and a variety of tacos and more. Owens, who is black, and Augenbaum, who is Jewish, came up with the idea to launch the Jewfro pop-ups in Richmond last holiday season. They decided to continue the concept in the new Raleigh location alongside Soul Taco. Jewfro's offerings brings flavors from Africa, a nod to Owens' ancestry, and pays respects to different Jewish cuisines, he says. The restaurant will be a deli in the daytime and have an expanded menu later in the evening. Nowadays, with cancel culture running rampant and everyone looking for a reason to be upset, I felt that name was fitting and thought it would pique people's interest, Owens says. They'd look into it and see we're doing this responsibly. We want to bring people together and celebrate differences and similarities in one space. They chose Raleigh because of its growth and southern hospitality, Owens says, who has worked in the food industry his whole life. He says the company will continue to seek out locally sourced products to incorporate in its recipes. The establishment will bring about 30 to 35 jobs that pay a living wage and offer tip sharing and other incentives, including a free meal. Owens says the practices are part of an ongoing effort to attract long-term employees despite the current labor shortage. Raleigh firm purchases multiplex near Cameron Park for $2.6 million. A Raleigh real estate agency plans to renovate a multiplex near historic Cameron Park after purchasing the building for $2.6 million. City Plat bought the three-story structure at 1213 to 1217 Hillsborough Street on July 9, according to Wake County deed records. The building dates to 1935 and has 15 apartments above ground-level retail space and will be updated with modern amenities, including central heating and air. The property at the corner with Ash Avenue also includes a parking lot across the street. Bagwell Holdings, LLC, a City Plat affiliate, acquired the site from 1215 Hillsborough Street, LLC, a Raleigh-based company. City Plat principal, Nikita Zitoff, says the firm will invest about $300,000 in the project, which will undergo construction in the next 6 months. Steve Peden, a principal with Avis & Young in Raleigh, represented the buyer and seller in the transaction. Zitoff convinced the owner to sell after a 17-year letter-writing campaign, he said. The real estate industry veteran said he was interested in the property because he has always been attracted to architecture from that period. Developer adds land around Wegmans. The Wegmans anchor development in Wake Forest is moving forward after a Florida-based developer purchased property and sold a portion of it to a home builder. Stiles Corporation of Fort Lauderdale bought two pieces of land totaling about 45 acres from the New York-based supermarket company for $14.6 million on July 15, according to Wake County deed records. Stiles is doing construction for Grove 98, the over 96-acre mixed-use destination with residential and commercial space underway just east of the Highway 98 bypass at Capitol Boulevard. Stiles bought a 20.85-acre parcel adjacent to Wegmans, which opened in May, and across Ligon Mill Road, as well as a 24.6-acre parcel to the north. It also acquired the abutting northernmost 26.7-acre property for $2.3 million from Raleigh-based Wake Forest Holdings, LLC. Stiles sold the Ligon Mill Road lot to Stanley Martin Homes for $10.5 million. And in a section called He Said It, we have a quote from Campbell Smith, Mid-Atlantic Managing Director for Trammell Crow Company, on the real estate developer launching its office in the Triangle. "We have deep roots in North Carolina. We're not just going to do one or two projects. We view this as a long-term market for us. I expect the Raleigh office to grow beyond the initial leaders that we've brought down there. We'll be there 20 years from now in a big way." And finally, a big number, $621.3 billion. That's the estimated U.S. retail and food services sales for June, about an 18% increase from last year, according to a preliminary U.S. Department of Commerce report. And now we turn to On Healthcare, written by Sonia Warrock. Key hires propel Roe's path. Roe has made a series of promotions, including a new COO. After hitting some trouble at the start of the pandemic last year, things appear to be turning around for a contract research organization based in Research Triangle Park. In April 2020, Roe, RHO, announced it was making the first layoffs in its history. Now, it's actively hiring and promoting within its ranks. This month, the company announced it had made two major promotions to bolster its leadership team. Tara Gladwell, who joined Roe in 2001 as a project manager, was promoted to the position of chief operating officer as the first person outside of the company's founding family to hold a C-suite position. Tara has been instrumental in building the clinical operations and business development functions at Roe, and I'm delighted to welcome her to this new role at our women-led company, CEO Laura Helms-Reese said in a statement. After 10-plus years on our executive committee and with proven expertise in advancing our business, Tara is uniquely qualified as COO in this period of rapid business growth. Gladwell received her bachelor's degree in biology from Guilford College and an MBA from Duke University. Also industry veteran Jack Modell, who joined the company in 2014 as vice president and senior medical officer, has been named chief medical officer. Modell is a psychiatrist with 40 years of clinical research experience and 20 years of holding senior leadership positions in the pharmaceutical and CRO space, including 10 years at GlaxoSmithKline. Jack has played a key role in our company's success, working tirelessly with sponsors to ensure the welfare of clinical trial participants and the safety and integrity of our clinical trials and programs, Helms-Reese said. Modell has a bachelor's degree in molecular, cellular, and developmental biology and a medical degree from the University of Colorado. Roe has also continued securing contracts from the federal government, including one contract in November, to standardize data collection, management, and analysis across studies supported by the Biomedical Advanced Research and Development Authority. And the company recently secured a contract to assess the proportion of high-risk people who have an allergic reaction to the Pfizer-BioNTech and the Moderna COVID-19 vaccines. Being able to better understand how individuals who already have severe allergies respond to these life-saving vaccines will support a safe national vaccination program, Helms-Reese said. In just the past 2 weeks, Roe had just under a dozen job postings listed on LinkedIn. After the pandemic hit, the 37-year-old company said it would cut its 400-employee workforce by 10%. Morrisville spinoff partners with leading children's hospital in D.C. A medical device company in Morrisville has inked a major deal with a leading pediatric hospital to use its biometric analysis software to screen babies for genetic disorders. MGeneRx Incorporated, a spinoff of Breakthrough Bioassets in Research Triangle Park, has entered into an exclusive licensing agreement with Children's National Hospital in Washington, D.C., which has been ranked as one of the top 10 best children's hospitals by U.S. News & World Report and the Leapfrog Group. The software is 90% accurate in detecting more than 128 syndromes using a picture of a newborn or infant's face taken with a phone or other device. It ranks the babies as either low, medium, or high risk for certain congenital birth defects, such as DeGeorge syndrome and Down syndrome, based on its scan of facial landmarks that can be indicators for the development of those disorders further down the line. MGeneRx worked with the Children's National Hospital and American Academy of Pediatrics on the technology, which was further enhanced by research conducted with the National Institute of Health's National Human Genome Research Institute. Gene therapy company raises $100 million. A gene therapy company based in California with a presence in Research Triangle Park has raised $100 million in a Series B financing to further its mission of transforming the way the therapies are designed, developed, and manufactured. Kriya Therapeutics, that's K-R-I-Y-A, raised the $100 million in equity in a round that included 36 investors, according to a securities filing. In recent years, we have seen the promise of gene therapy become a reality for the treatment of a number of devastating diseases, co-founder and CEO Shankar Ramaswamy said. However, the field has been constrained by critical limitations in manufacturing technology, vector design capabilities, and cost. And we have a section now called He Said It with a quote from Larry Boyd, vice president of product development at Durham's Bioventus, on the firm's new bone graft substitute solution that can be used in a variety of procedures to repair missing bones. Spine, trauma, and foot and ankle surgeons are looking for allograft options that handle well for a variety of procedures. OsteoAmp Select Flowable comes ready to use and is designed to be delivered in a range of methods and to provide excellent retention characteristics at the grafting site. And finally, a big number. 18. That's the number of sites Durham's Velocity Clinical Research now has after acquiring Clarity Clinical Research in New York and Providence Clinical Research in California. The acquisitions come after Velocity was acquired by a London-based private equity firm, GHO Capital, in April from NaviMed Capital. Financial details were not released. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to A Better World, inside the Triangle's nonprofit scene. First, we start off with the column written by Jennifer Toll Whiteside, who is the president and CEO of the North Carolina Community Foundation. The headline, Successful Capital Campaigns Take Engagement and Planning. As community and business leaders, you have likely been approached to lead or otherwise support a capital campaign, an intense fundraising effort designed to build an organization's assets and capacity by raising a specific amount of money within a defined period of time. Capital campaigns are an integral part of the growth and expansion of nonprofit organizations because they enable nonprofits to expand their services or programs, purchase land, or construct buildings. A successful capital campaign depends on many elements, a compelling feasibility study being the first, to reach and exceed core goals and objectives. Perhaps most important are the leaders and volunteers who plan, implement, publicize, and support the campaign along the way. While the organization's board, staff, and regular volunteers are all involved in some capacity, a capital campaign requires deeper involvement by additional community members and key leadership by a campaign chair. The campaign chair is a community leader who is carefully selected and approached by the nonprofit to lead the capital campaign committee. This person, or people, if co-chairs, sets the stage for the campaign by facilitating early major gifts and leading promotion and advocacy efforts. As our world has gotten faster and busier, serving as a capital campaign chair may feel daunting or unattainable, but it doesn't have to be. A nonprofit engaging in a well-planned capital campaign will have the resources to set the campaign chair up for success. If you're thinking about serving as a capital campaign chair, here are a few tips that will position you for a smooth and productive experience. 1. Be passionate about the cause, organization, and project that the campaign is supporting. You will be a leading advocate for the campaign, so this is an important factor. 2. Be willing and able to commit significant time and attention to the campaign, which may last a year or more. 3. Be able to make a notable gift to leverage the ability of others to join you in the campaign. 4. Have a strong personal or professional network of potential major donors. 5. Be comfortable making personal asks for significant gifts from peers and other leaders in the community. 6. Have the discipline and organization skills to progress through the campaign plan systematically. And 7. Have full confidence in the nonprofit and know that the capital campaign is only the beginning of this next phase of important work. This also includes knowing and understanding the plan for sustainable operation of the new or expanded services in the future. CASA, C-A-S-A, a Wake County nonprofit with the mission to provide access to stable, affordable housing for people who are homeless or at risk by developing and managing rental communities, is in the midst of a capital campaign to build Kings Ridge Apartments. Kings Ridge is a high-quality, affordable apartment community that will provide permanent, supportive housing for homeless households. CASA Director of Development, Missy Hatley, shared two important strengths that the community leader, Molly Painter, brings to the role of campaign chair. Molly's personal investment is ending homelessness, combined with her willingness to truly understand the issues facing women living on the streets and her belief in the solution we are working toward, making her a perfect leader. A capital campaign is an exciting opportunity for the community to rally behind an organization, to fill a gap, or provide an innovative new service or program. Your role in a successful campaign can make the difference in our community for years to come. And now we also have some short news articles on the A Better World page. News Foundation lands new leader. Journalism Funding Partners, a national group based in Raleigh that looks to support American newsrooms, has named Rusty Coates as its new executive director. Rusty is a perfect fit for JFP. He checks all the boxes, a journalist, digital pioneer, and a keen understanding of how nonprofits serve their communities, said JFP board chair Orange Quarles III. We will maximize all of his talents as we connect newsrooms to funding sources. This position is funded in part by a two-year grant from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation to support JFP's mission to increase the depth, diversity, and sustainability of local journalism. I believe local journalism is vital to the health of our democracy, and I've worked my entire career to champion its role in our communities. That is on par with clean air, clean water, education, healthcare, and the arts to support a functioning society, Coates said. And I look forward to building on previous work to establish JFP as a conduit for new pathways in journalism, philanthropy, and local impact. Coates began his career as a reporter and columnist and pivoted to digital in the mid-1990s, launching and managing digital news sites at the local and corporate level. For the past 11 years, he has worked as a consultant at Coates to Coates, working with more than 200 nonprofit, for-profit, and news operations, as well as with foundations funding journalism innovation. Since mid-2020, JFP has helped secure and is managing more than $1.6 million in grants to support new and expanded local journalism coverage, and has numerous new partnerships and programs in progress. And finally, V Foundation supports runners. The V Foundation for Cancer Research is inviting runners from across the U.S. to register as part of Team V for the 2021 Bank of America Chicago Marathon and the 50th running of the TCS New York City Marathon. Scheduled for October 10, the sold-out Chicago Marathon will host about 35,000 runners. The sold-out NYC Marathon is November 7 and will host approximately 33,000 runners. Individuals who are interested in participating in either marathon can only secure an entry through an official charity like the V Foundation. Team V gives participants the opportunity to make their miles count for more by running for a cause. The V Foundation offers two fundraising options for Chicago. Runners can fundraise $2,000 for a race entry and other Team V perks, or they can upgrade to a $3,000 fundraising option and receive race entry, the team perks, and a complimentary two-night hotel stay. For the NYC Marathon, runners can fundraise $3,500 for a race entry and other Team V perks, or upgrade to $4,500 in fundraising to have a complimentary two-night hotel stay added to their benefits. The V Foundation was started by former NC State University basketball coach Jim Valvano, who died of cancer in 1993. And now we turn to the continuing series, The Promise Of. The headline, A Foundation Built from Referrals, How Robert and Jean-Marie Lee Have Leveraged Word of Mouth to Expand Their Construction Firm. Story by Connie Gentry. About this project, the project name is based on a historical reference relating to Union Army leader William Sherman's promise of giving 40 acres to slaves after the Civil War. That promise, which came to be known as 40 Acres and a Mule, never came through as President Andrew Johnson rescinded the order after taking office. Residential renovations have been trending strong for months, inspired in part by all the time spent at home during the pandemic. When Discover Home Loans surveyed consumers last year, it found that 58% of homeowners were planning home improvements in the months from August 2020 to July 2021. It's a trend that proved timely for J.R. Lee Construction, which built up from a foundation of robust referrals when husband and wife duo Robert and Jenry Lee launched the company in November 2019. Their business ground to a temporary halt when shelter-in-place and social distancing became the norm. Although construction was deemed an essential industry and commercial projects continued during the COVID shutdown, people were exceedingly reluctant to have work done in their homes. Subcontractors were often unwilling to risk exposure as well, so for several months the Lee's construction business was on hold. By October, business was picking back up, and by the start of 2021, the pipeline was filling up with projects, fueled primarily by referrals from customers pleased with the quality of work. We had a customer that did a renovation in April, and we've gotten 7 referrals so far from that one job, says Jean-Marie Lee, who left her job as a branch manager with Wells Fargo to run the financial operations at J.R. Lee Construction. Robert serves as the general contractor and project manager for their construction business, but also continues to work a full-time job in information technology. Initially, the couple had looked into flipping houses as the business they would launch, but after managing a $50,000 renovation project for their church, Mount Moriah Church in Garner, they started getting requests from other churches to do renovations, as well as getting referrals from church members wanting residential renovations. Their work has taken them to communities throughout the Triangle, even as far out as Sanford. Robert and Jenry declined to provide a revenue figure, but say business has been steadily growing and their projects have been profitable from day one. In our business, we don't have to finance anything, Robert explains. Customers give us a deposit and we purchase materials using the deposit. We don't have to kick in our money to do the projects. We've kept making a profit on every job. But the margin of profit has increased because the scope of projects has grown. Their transition to larger projects has been a natural progression across 2021. In the beginning, they were doing one-off projects for clients, painting a few rooms, installing new flooring, replacing cabinets. Now they are more often doing complete kitchen and bath remodels, adding rooms or converting spaces. Initially, during the pandemic, people were sitting at home and wanting to do small projects, Jean-Marie says. As things have begun to open up, they've gotten more comfortable doing bigger projects in their homes. Instead of just a quick backsplash in the kitchen, we'll do all the cabinets, the countertop, the flooring, the lights, the whole shebang. As the projects have grown larger, so have the profits. They estimate their profit margin has gone up 10 to 15%, but now there are new challenges, primarily the rising cost of materials and ongoing supply chain interruptions that delay shipments. There's no way to stress how difficult it has become to source materials, Robert says. It affects everything from project budgets and profit margins to the estimates we give and the time frame we can deliver in. Prices of materials can shoot up 3 weeks after we give a customer an estimate. We work with quite a few local hometown suppliers as well as some commercial suppliers, but the way shipping time frames are working, some customers will say they want to purchase the materials themselves. That can work fine if they can buy it off the shelf at a big box store, which might give us a quicker turnaround time than me ordering it and having to wait on the shipment. The Associated General Contractors of America said the cost of goods and services increased a record-setting 4.3% in May and 24.3% over the past 12 months. The increase in prices for construction materials over the past year far outstrips contractors' ability to charge more for projects, said Ken Simonson, the association's chief economist, adding that the 24.3% year-over-year increase from May 2020 to this year was nearly double that of any previous year. That gap means contractors are being hit with huge costs that they did not anticipate and cannot pass on. The association said products with some of the steepest increases included those made from wood, metals, and plastics and gypsum, which is used in construction items such as wallboard. In its analysis of year-over-year cost increases, the association noted the price index rose 111% for lumber and plywood, 75.6% for steel mill products, 60.4% for brass items, and 28.6% for aluminum items. The price of wallboard has gone up over 14% since May 2020. While most businesses are bemoaning the labor crisis, Robert says it has been much harder to find materials than workers. We have good relationships with several subcontractors, and we've stuck with our core group, he notes, adding that they work with 8 to 10 subcontractors at any given time. The material delays can impact productivity and make it difficult to keep projects on schedule. Used to be I could get materials in a few days. Now glass is taking 8 weeks, and cabinets can take 8 to 14 weeks. These are all temporary challenges, and what Robert and Jean-Marie focus on is the long-term, building a legacy business for their two sons, and one that is also a tribute to those who raised them. They both graduated from Elizabeth City State University in the town where they graduated from high school. Robert's grandfather, who still lives in Elizabeth City, remains one of his key mentors. My grandfather is 86 years old and still sharp as a tack. He's a master carpenter, and if opportunities had not been so limited for African Americans when he was growing up, he'd have been a master engineer. It means a lot to know what we're achieving as part of his legacy and my father's. It shows with the right teachings and base, you can transform the legacy of a family, he says. Jean-Marie's family also has a strong influence on how the young couple is building their business. Both of my parents are entrepreneurs. They ran a telecom company in D.C. and Baltimore before we moved to North Carolina, so I learned business savvy from watching them, and it shaped me for how a husband and wife can run a business together and support each other, she says. The vast majority of their projects, 95%, are for residential homeowners, but they continue to do some work for other businesses and investors who are renovating homes for resale. Our 3-year plan is to move into building single-family homes and duplexes, then graduate into doing some government contracts and residential development, Robert concludes. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we return to the Viewpoint page to read the second column. This column is written by Kristen Brody, who is a fellow at the Metropolitan Policy Program at Brookings Research. at Brookings, research assistant Carl Romer contributed to the report. The headline, Positive Hiring Trend, Leaving Blacks Behind. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics jobs report for June showed a continuation of the steady economic recovery from the COVID-19 pandemic. Nationally, 850,000 jobs were added last month, while the unemployment rate ticked up slightly to 5.9% after falling from 6.1% in April to 5.8% in May. This recovery, however, continues to be uneven across racial lines. Black workers had June's highest unemployment rate at 9.2%. On average, black teens ages 16 to 19 had the highest unemployment rate over the 13-month period at 19.4%, while white men over 20 had the lowest at 6.1%. The new jobs numbers come as more Americans receive COVID-19 vaccinations, companies offer bonuses and increased wages to incentivize job seekers, and states cut unemployment benefits. By July 1, 2021, 155.8 million Americans, or 46%, were fully vaccinated against COVID-19. But there are racial disparities in the percentage of the population that has been vaccinated. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, of the 57% of people who had received at least one dose of the vaccine and whose race ethnicity was known, 60% were white, 15% were Latino or Hispanic, 9% were black, 6% were Asian American, and 1% were Native American. With increased vaccinations, many states lifted restrictions and fully reopened. On June 11, Illinois fully reopened, lifting capacity limits, social distancing requirements, and mask mandates at most businesses, while bars, restaurants, and other establishments were allowed to resume normal operating hours. By June 15, New York reopened 2 weeks ahead of the previously announced July 1 reopening date. These reopenings led to massive recruitment efforts by businesses seeking workers. In addition to increased wages, companies are offering incentives such as hiring bonuses, educational benefits, and training opportunities to attract and retain workers. Meanwhile, governors in 25 Republican-led states have ended enhanced unemployment insurance benefets ahead of their September 6 expiration, claiming that supplemental funds de-incentivize workers from filling open positions. While June's 850,000 job increase is promising, the number of people who are not in the labor force but who currently want a job is at 6.4 million, up by 1.4 million since February 2020. These people are not counted in the unemployment rate because they had not actively looked for work within the last 4 weeks. Racial disparities in unemployment also continue, with black workers, particularly black teens, experiencing the highest unemployment rates. As the recovery continues, employers, government officials, and policymakers must continue to consider Americans who will be impacted by expiring enhanced unemployment benefits, as well as those who are not actively looking for work due to problems in transportation access, a lack of child care, or other issues. And with our remaining time, we'll read a couple of the news items that were in the Promise Of section. Lowe's contest to highlight diverse-owned businesses. Lowe's has brought back its popular pitch program, Making It with Lowe's, that debuted in 2020. The opportunity, conducted in partnership with Damon John, star of ABC's Shark Tank, creates a way for diverse-owned small businesses to sell their products on Lowe's.com and in Lowe's stores nationwide. The retailer will consider innovative products both in and beyond the home improvement categories. Consumers will be invited to vote for their fan favorite, and the field will then narrow to the five top suppliers and the fan favorite. These finalists will pitch their products to Lowe's executives for an opportunity to receive mentorship and be sold at Lowe's. Applications will be accepted through July 30 at Lowe's and through Lowe's.com/makingitwithlowe's. Lowe's encourages applicants who are members of the LGBTQ+ community, minorities, people with disabilities, veterans, and women to apply. New CEO named at Southeast Raleigh Promise. Yvette Holmes, a leader in nonprofit management with experience in resident and community engagement, affordable housing, and cultivating partnerships with key stakeholders, will become the new CEO of Southeast Raleigh Promise, effective August 1. The mission of Southeast Raleigh Promise is to break the cycle of intergenerational poverty for individuals, families, and children living there. As a respected colleague in national networks and amongst peers locally, Holmes has spent the last 15 years working to advance affordable housing goals and wealth creation strategies through home ownership attainment. A Southeast Raleigh resident for over 20 years, Holmes served in 2020 as a co-chair for the City of Raleigh's Affordable Housing Bond Advisory Committee, charged with educating and informing the community about the benefits and impact of the bond. More than 71% of Raleigh residents voted in support of the bond, creating additional resources needed to advance housing goals in the city. And moving to general news in the Triangle Business Journal. Wing Concept plans to expand. Raleigh-based chicken wing brand holds course despite uncertainty. This is written by Erica Wells. A Raleigh-based chicken wing concept is running strong amid the pandemic with plans to continue expanding its concept. Wing It On, CEO and founder Matt Ensero, says the company moved forward with its business plan, which included expanding and investing in the digital space, despite the uncertainty that came with the onset of the pandemic in March 2020. It's such a tough industry, so whenever you have the wind in your sails, you have to push hard and push forward when you have that momentum, Ensero says. We were aligned with what customers were looking for throughout the pandemic. 10 years ago, Ensero started the brand in his hometown of Waterbury, Connecticut. He launched a 785-square-foot location with two fryers that reached its production capacity within 2 months, he says. In 2014, Ensero franchised the business model and now has 9 locations, including food trucks in Connecticut, New Jersey, Georgia, Alabama, Texas, and North Carolina, with plans to open another one in Birmingham, Alabama this summer. Ensero moved to Raleigh in 2019 and opened the headquarters at 2526 Hillsborough Street across from NC State University's campus last September with an investment of $190,000. He chose the Triangle because its major growth would allow the company to continue to steadily grow year-over-year sales. Wing It On had 25% sales growth in 2020 compared to 2019, with the top stores increasing 45%. If we were losing the population in central Connecticut and the people that were leaving were a lot of people with disposable income, we couldn't continue to grow there, Ensero says. The Raleigh-Durham area is a top 5 growth market in the country, and what really sold me were the 3 research universities. There's no better synergy than chicken wings and college students. And we're going to stop there as we're almost out of time, but we'll leave you with the business pulse. The question, are you okay with paying more to dine out so restaurant workers can earn a living wage? 53%? Said yes, and I'll still tip. 27% said yes, but I won't tip as often. And 20% said no, I'll avoid dining out if the trend continues. And that was a total number of 526 responses. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.